Do you know the difference between a lab-grown diamond and a natural diamond? In this week's episode, you'll meet Louis, who works in fine jewelry. Hear how he got started in the business, his passion for design, and the steps he's taking to establish himself as an industry expert.
Hi, Louis. Welcome to our podcast.
Hi, Roxy. Hi, Nate.
Thank you so much for taking the time today.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
No worries. And let's dive in, like I always say. Let's find out what you do for a living.
So I make jewelry for a living. Make fine jewelry for a living. So we make diamond rings or diamond earrings for customers. And I'm also a gemstone wholesaler. My specialty is in sapphires. So we sell sapphires to jewelry designing companies as well. So that's what I do for a living.
Oh, wow. Diamonds. Oh, that's so cool.
Thank you. Yeah, I would have to say that people have this fantasy about diamonds. But if you deal with every day, it's just like a regular thing, like for me. So, yeah.
Yeah, I think I only have a set of earrings my mum gave me.
Yeah.
Gone down years and years. But yeah, you're better than a girl's best friend, I guess.
Thank you so much for saying that. Yeah.
That should be your tagline.
I mean, this could be my slogan, you know?
Yeah.
Oh, gosh.
I was reading the other day that there's a couple of different types of diamonds. Like there's natural diamonds or lab grown diamonds. Do you deal with much of that?
So right now at this point, I'm only focusing doing the natural diamonds, because that is something I have experience, with in the past. So, but I can see there are lab grown diamonds is just growing the market. And in my opinion, I think it's sort of taking some market share of the natural diamonds, especially for the smaller diamonds. Yeah. But I think which is makes sense because it's so much cheaper, it's more affordable. So I understand why that happens, but I also think that the natural diamonds has been around Earth for millions of thousands of years and has been on Earth for really a long time. So it has its value and it has its history as well. So, but right now I'm only focusing doing the natural ones. For the lab grown ones, we will see what happening in the future. We will see if it will, take over the natural ones or will it be his own market? I don't know. And I'm not the one to say about that. But at the end of the day, is from my opinion, I think natural diamonds and lab-grown diamonds, they are two complete different things. Even the material is the same, but it's just like eggs. Like some people love scrambled eggs. Some people love sunny upside egg, you have your own taste and it really depends on your budget, et cetera. And I would also say it really depends on your purpose when it comes to purchasing a diamond. If you're a billionaire and you wanted to invest something that is going to keep its value, then you're definitely going to go with natural diamonds, right? So it really depends on your purpose and what are you going to do with your diamonds. Yeah.
Brilliant. My grandfather he managed diamond mines in Africa.
Uh-huh.
And he sat me down when I was 6 years old and said, if someone offers you a diamond, Roxanne, you bloody take it. The amount of times I've been offered a diamond under the table and I never took it, you take it.
Yeah.
And that weirdly stuck with me forever. And I didn't know he was a miner at that point. Mm-hmm. Years later, my parents explained it to me. I was oh, okay.
Wow, that is a fascinating story.
Yeah, he moved around the world managing mines and had an amazing story, which is so cool. But yeah, I really cherish that you are going for the natural ones because the stories that actually come out of the diamonds that are produced are amazing.
yeah, exactly. And I would also say with natural diamonds, it usually comes with history as well. For example, one greatest diamond is the Hope Diamond. So the Hope Diamond is actually, you heard about the movie Titanic, right?
Yeah.
So actually the necklace is based on the Hope Diamonds. And just by the Hope Diamonds, you can realize, is known as an unlucky diamond. A lot of the owners of the diamond has been, you know, just killed or, passed away. So you learn about this kind of stories and you learn about brands like Henry Winston. And so a lot of this kind of fascinating stories you can just learn by, you know, a piece of diamonds. And I think that is something fascinating about the diamonds. It's not just about the value or the low. It's also about the history and also the stories behind it.
No, they all have some kind of history and it's amazing.
Exactly, exactly. And I do have this thing about something that can last forever, like diamonds or gemstones. It lasts like forever. Like, you know, it's not just like a pair of glass. It, you know, if it, after for a while, it will be broken and you need to get it fixed. But, diamond gemstone, I feel like there are some special, specialties about it. It is something special, it's something personal, it's something, emotional, to the owner. So I think that's the reason why I joined the industry. One of the reasons why I'm still here, you know.
It's definitely, jewelry has that effect on people. I have, so I've lived in so many different countries in the world and my little jewelry pouch is kind of where I feel at home and explaining to people where I got certain things because they're kind of like the certain milestones in my life. So I have three bangles on my wrist and they're all gold or white gold. Yeah. One's from when I was 18, one was when I was 21, and one's from my wedding day. And my mom and dad got my, well, the 18 is from my grandmother. It's gold. She got them made when we were all born as kids. And she's been giving them out as a, like, it's something beautiful that you get on your 18th. It's a rite of passage, essentially. My 21st is white gold and gold. That's from my mum. And that's from South Africa. That's from Nairobi, Kenya, where the white gold and gold mines are. And then my marriage one is actually Welsh gold. My husband bought it for me and he found out that these bangles are actually called slave bangles. And he thought it was quite funny that I was becoming his slave. But, you know, every jewelry piece has that beautiful story, that memory, and it means so much to each person who owns it.
Yeah, exactly. And I've made a lot of engagement rings for my friends or for my clients. And it just feels like we're building, like a stronger relationship, especially for my friends. Like, I know them more. I know them, like, okay, why don't you want to go with a round diamond? You want to go with a heart shaped diamond. Maybe something happens, you know, some great memory that he had with his, partners. Which is something I feel like by making them a piece of jewelry, I know them better and we create a stronger relationship. And that is something I like about my job. It's just like know that person better by making them a piece of jewelry, and which is so great and so fun to do.
That's brilliant. Yeah. You're changing lives.
Yeah, exactly.
And building a community at the same time.
Exactly. And I can make a living out of that.
Yeah.
Just be honest, you know. Yeah.
It's good. That's why people are here. It's like, how do you make a living out of something you're passionate about, essentially?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, that's probably a good segue to the next question then. So working in the, you know, the fine jewelry industry, what does an average day look like for you? What sort of tasks need to happen for this career?
Well, for me, because I mainly work with individual clients, and also I would say 70% of my business is for custom-made jewelry, and 30% is for just selling the gemstones or to designing companies. So first thing, my day is always check the computer first, see if there's any new messages, new emails coming in. And then second thing I would do is check with the vendors, see where my goods are, because sometimes it is not necessary in Hong Kong, the diamonds are purchased or the gemstones are purchased. So I need to keep track on the shipments. Like, thank God in my career, nothing get lost, you know, which is something, I hope it never happens in my life.
Touch one.
Exactly. So check on the shipments and also check on the shipment from the vendor. Also track the shipments that I send to the clients as well. I have clients from all around the world. I just sent an engagement ring last week to one of my clients in Australia. And so I just messaged him this morning. Hey, I saw this delivered, but I didn't hear anything back from you. So can you confirm that? So it's very important to keep track of every shipment, make sure everything doesn't get lost. So that is for the individual client part. And for the dealing with the jewelry designing companies or jewelry factory part will be, I supply them raw gemstones and small size diamonds. So it's really important for me to check with them, see if the goods are up to their expectations. Yeah, if it is, then it will go to the next step, which is the price negotiation. Yeah, like, okay, let's talk about how much you want it, which is a very, very interesting process as well. Because sometimes the market goes ups and downs. And so it's very important to know like how much you can sell your goods and how much the client budget is. So there will be a lot of conversations happens in that part as well. Yeah, basically just endless communication, I would say.
Yeah, I guess it's kind of like almost being in the stock market, kind of. The cost of diamond goes up and down, so you can't just communicate the same price all the time.
You've
got to get into that negotiation cycle.
Yeah,
so exactly. Many and I'd love to talk to you about how you do that because a lot of people struggle with that.
Well, I do have to say, thank God. Just talk a little bit about my background is I didn't just start the company out of the blue. I actually worked for a very small company in Hong Kong, which owned by an Indian guy. So because the company is very small, so I kind of like when I was working there, I have exposure to every aspect, like picking up the goods, doing the shipments, talking to the clients, every single part I need to get involved. It's quite exhausting because it's just like, okay, my job has to do A to Z, you know, everything I need to get involved. But actually, I feel like this is a good experience for people who wanted to start a company. After working there for, I think, 1 or 2 years, I realized, you know what, this is something I am interested in, and I'm definitely going to start my jewelry company one day. So I stayed there around 3-4 years, and then I learned the skills, how to negotiate with people, how to do all of this tasks, and I decided to just move a step forward and start it. So I would say having that past experience is extremely important for me, because you need to know what you're doing. You need to know, like, what people you need to talk to, what shipping company, you know, you should talk to. So that past experience has, like, helped me a lot, I have to say. Yeah.
Was that a jewelry business as well, or just trade?
That one is a jewelry business, but they don't do any, like, finished jewelry. They only do wholesale of the diamonds and gemstones, and they sell it to the designing company. So I am the designing company right now.
You took that up.
Yeah, exactly. I just move a step forward because I think that's something I like to do, like designing. I also do a little bit of wholesaling as well. So here I am today.
That's brilliant. You took that step. It's amazing.
Yeah.
I've got two quick follow-up questions. Okay, so you're based in Hong Kong, right? So, but you mentioned that you were designing a ring for someone in Australia. So what does that look like? So Roxy here wants another beautiful diamond ring.
Yeah.
And she wants to buy it from you. How does that, how do you communicate? How do you design and discuss what it's going to look like and the process behind that?
So, the Australian coins approached me saying that he wants to propose to his girlfriend. So, first question I would ask, do you want to, like, material you're going after? Are you going for a diamond or gemstones? And then he would tell me, okay, I'm going with diamond for sure. I would say, okay, so tell me your budget. You always start with budget. Let's see how much budget you wanted to spend on the engagement ring. And then I would say, okay, you have this kind of budget. I'm going to send you a couple of options. Do you have any preference? This is also another question I would ask. Like, do you want a round diamond, like a cushion cut diamond, princess cut diamond? Do you have any ideas? Usually they already got some ideas. I say, okay, share me a pictures, an idea that you got. And after the sharing that, and I will also look into their budget. And then I will just look around, like, what kind of, diamonds available. Like, depends the cut, the carity, the carat, which is the weight. All of these aspects, and just finally give them quotations and then take it from there. Yeah. So this is how I do it. I ask them what kind of preferences that you have and what kind of budget that you have. And I come up with something and then, send it to them.
So you then share with them like, drawings of what it's going to look like. And, I assume you take payment up front before you start ordering diamonds and getting things made, or how does that normally work?
Correct. So after they give me a couple of ideas, saying, oh, they want round diamonds, and I will source the round diamonds. And at that point, I will also attach a couple of designs as well in the quotation, saying, hey, this is round diamonds and within your budget, and this is the design A, B, C that I suggest. Let's see. You know, because if it is out of the blue, people don't have any ideas. But if you give them options, they will say, oh, I actually like B more, but with a couple of changes. I said, okay, cool. And then after that, I will send a final invoice, because it is within their budget and that's the design that they want. So I will send them for like official quotation saying that, okay, if you wanted to start the project, this is the final product it's going to look like. I will also take up 50% deposit first. And as soon as they send me a deposit, I will order the diamonds and also start to making the ring as well. So after the ring is done, I will take a video and also take a picture to the clients, and just to let them confirm everything is okay. And then I will ask them to give me the 50% balance before the shipping. So that's how I work with our clients overseas. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, very simple. But usually overseas clients, they don't come. I don't take like strangers' orders. Like, if I don't know you personally, I usually would decline the overseas clients' order, especially when it comes to bigger amounts. So most of my overseas clients, they are my friends. I know them from a friend also by referral, and I feel like it has been like doing well and building relationships with them. And sometimes they love the pieces, they refer me to their friends or family as well. So yeah, I'm so grateful to have these friends. Yes.
That's brilliant. You're building a client base, which, yeah. You know, we just interviewed somebody who's a broker, and they're talking about client base and word of mouth and how you get into all of those different households, essentially, mm-hmm. and be that person that people recommend. So, you know, it's getting to know the person, the people that you already know, but also working with people that you know on the other side of the world so that you feel more comfortable sending a diamond.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There was a funny story. There was one, this is something I learned working in my past company is, my ex-boss asked me to pick up a pet of goods. And when I arrived in the office, and I just took the goods and then leave the office. but actually that guy gave me the wrong goods. Like when I go back to the office and I opened that, I said, this is not what I'm supposed to pick up. And why he just gave me that, you know? And this is something very shocking for me. This, I think that happens at my second month in my job, in my old job. And after that happens, I always would check the goods. I always needed to take pictures. And that is something, because I'm running this business with my sister. I tell my sister, take the pictures, always take a picture, always has proof. Because just thank God that time, you know, we managed to switch it back, you know, and just like a very, very lucky case. But what if something goes wrong? Something they just deny. No, this is what you pick up. You already left the office. Like, you know, saying things like that, I'll be like, oh my gosh, it'd be such a, you know, I would get into a big trouble. So that is something, I learned about in the past experience, and just be more careful about picking up the goods, leaving the goods, the consignments, et cetera, et cetera. It is always this like small detail in the job that you need to be aware of, and then take care of that. Just be extra careful when it's dealing with the goods and things like that. Yeah,
it's understanding that the very, very small things make the biggest difference in like exactly. A massive puzzle piece that becomes a job description. And you know, it's one of the main things I always love about starting a new job is uncovering how everything within an organization works so that you can be a better person and a better employee.
Yeah.
So when you're, you know, if you're in HR and you're handing something onto payroll and you know the payroll person, you spent hours talking to that person. you get your job quicker, you're done quicker and understand it better. But as well as you having that job before, you know, you're in that position and it was your responsibility. Luckily, you were able to swap it back. But, you know, if it was my luck, you'd still be living and breathing that.
That I was really, really scared because of that. Like, oh gosh, like, because I never experienced something like that, right? And you don't know how to handle that. And I just go back to the office right away and talk to the boss and also, talk to the boss in that office and also like talk to my boss as well. I don't want it to happen again. To be honest.
At least you're the boss now. You can just kind of be like, oh.
Exactly. Exactly.
Conversation.
Well, but you still have to be very careful because it's just like a very valuable goods, right? And just being extra careful is always like helpful in the business. And people trust you is because that you're trustworthy, you take care of the goods. When I'm doing business with friends is also like putting myself like as part of the deal, right?
Yeah.
You know, because it is because they trust me, so they purchase the diamonds or the jewelry from you.
And if you get it wrong this time, it comes out of your own pocket.
I know. So extra careful this time, right now.
So talking about, you know, old jobs and things, how did you get started in all of this?
Well, I started, it's a very funny story because when I actually studied HR in uni. But after graduations, I was kind of like wondering what I want to do for my future because I have no interest, you know, to get involved with HR. This is not something I think I enjoy doing. I thought I like marketing. And I, after graduation, I got a job in marketing and I worked there for, I think, 6 weeks only. And I decided, you know what, marketing is not my thing. But you never know unless you've tried it, right?
Mm-hmm,
so I quit that job. And then I was doing a lot of part-time jobs. And then one of the part-time jobs that I got is working in a jewelry show. I work as assistant in a booth, in a jewelry like wholesale booth in Wan Chai, Hong Kong. So I got there and I worked there. Basically, you couldn't do a lot of things. Like because you are new there, you know nothing about the industry. The people hire you to work in that booth is basically just make sure nobody steals the goods. You know, it's like a bodyguard standing there. And I worked there for, I think, 3 or 4 days that time. And then the company owner, like the booth owner, talked to me, "Hey, are you interested in joining my company?" Like, his assistant just left. Mm-hmm. And I say, yes, why not? I don't have a job right now. Say yes first, it still happens. So that's how I started my jewelry journey, is to say yes to a booth owner, in the jewelry show. And then I worked there for 4 years and then quit and then started my own thing. Yeah. Which is a very interesting story.
Yeah. So it happens so often. A lot of our guests, it's just being in the right place, talking to the right people, and it can just change the direction of your career completely. Like, that's just amazing.
Exactly. Exactly. And then when I was in uni, I never thought of doing something with jewelry or with diamonds or with gemstones, but it just opportunities there and you say yes and yeah, it just sort of like happens. So I feel like I'm grateful that I didn't plan to find something I like, but eventually I find the things that I like. So yeah, I would say I'm very lucky. Yeah.
Well, also it's like, it's not as if you came out of high school loving jewelry and then did an HR degree and then went back to it. You found something new through one person and through one almost temp job, essentially. Yeah. And this is why we talk about volunteering a lot on the podcast as well. It's like getting yourself out there, trying new things and seeing what you like and what you really don't like at the same time.
Exactly.
But it means, meeting that one person and spending 4 years learning all of those puzzle pieces then gets you to the point where you feel like you can make that leap and start a company on your own, which is amazing.
I know. I do have to say, like, I agree with you, Roxy, like putting yourself out there and experience as much as possible is definitely a very good way to know what you like and what you don't like. Just like I said, I thought that I liked doing marketing, but no, there's a lot of like arrangements. So yeah, but I didn't know about it until I started doing a marketing job. Right. So yeah, so I absolutely agree with you. Just put yourself out there and then try different things out. Yeah.
But am I right in saying that 6 weeks in marketing now really probably helps your business right now?
Exactly. I would say it does. It makes me know that I'm the person who doesn't really like to do a lot of marketing. So when I started this company with my sister, I just told her that, you know what, I'm just only going to focus on the sourcing and design of the product. You're going to do the marketing PR because, oh gosh, yeah. Dealing with people is not easy, but dealing with diamonds and gemstones, I think it's easier for me.
They're easier to talk to.
Exactly. Easier to talk to. Correct.
But that's a really, really good point. You know what you don't like. Mm-hmm. And that is the thing we talk to about a lot of people. It's figuring out what you don't like and how you can stay away from it, but also finding the solution to that, like getting your sister involved and if she hopefully likes that side of it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Correct.
So with your current role then, so if you were coming out of school and you were deciding that you want to be a jewelry designer, what would be a quicker path for someone to get to where you are now?
Well, I would have to say first thing is you know your purpose, like which part of diamond industry you wanted to do. If you wanted to become a jewelry designer, I definitely suggest you to go to designing companies for sure. If you want to work in an auction house, I would suggest you to get a GRI certifications first, become a diamond expert first. But if you wanted to be a business owner, I would suggest you to just dive into working in a company? Like, because I would say, because your purpose is different, the skills that you need is different, right? If you wanted to start a company on your own, which means you not only you need to deal with the diamonds, you need to know about accounting, you need to know about the brand buildings, and you need to know about how to deal with people. And there's a lot of like these small skills that you need to run a business. But like going to jewelry designing school doesn't teach you that, right? They don't teach you accounting. So why don't you just like, you know, start in a company, start in a jewelry company. And then I suggest starting in a smaller one is always the better, because you get, you get in touch with every single part. But starting in a big company, I would say, that would not be my first choice, because you just know like a very small part. So if you decided to want to, run a jewelry company, starting in a smaller company, and then your boss is the key thing. Like, it really depends on your boss, if he's willing to teach a lot of things and explain a lot of things to you. A smaller company, you're definitely going to get a chance to know about the boss, how he started business. And I think that really works for me. So it really depends on what kind of like aspect of jewelry section you want to do. Yeah, that's what I think. Yeah.
I think that works for any career. Starting in a smaller company, you get stuck in with everything. You get to see how everything works. And the more, like the bigger companies that I join, the more I'm actually, I struggle to get information. I struggle to put all those puzzle pieces together because there are all these wonderful things in place for me to just do my job, but that's just not who I am. So I'm like, why does that person do his job?
Exactly.
No, I think that's brilliant advice. I think small companies are perfect and they're easy to talk to. They're also really good at getting unconventional ways into them, you know, like the booth position, but also applying for a job in a stranger way rather than just putting your resume in, like just going and talking to that person, picking up the phone, popping in a physical resume into the shop rather than sending an email nowadays means all the difference.
Exactly. Yeah. I absolutely agree with you on that. So like for me, working in a smaller company works for me. Working in a bigger company, you might learn how the structure of the company, but if you are like a new starter to the jewelry industry, at the end of the day, it's really, really depends on what you want. So I always ask myself this question, what I want. What I'm doing right now, is it helping me to get what I want in the future? If the yes, I stay. If the no, I leave. You know.
Wow, that's brilliant. That is a solid. Yeah, a lot of people would say, okay, it's yeah, but I'll do it in a couple of years. But
yeah,
that's awesome.
Always ask what you want when you get started. The goal might change a little bit. Like you would say, I want to run my own jewelry, business in one day. And then, okay, so like, what kind of jewelry you want to do? Do you want to do gold plated jewelry? Do you want to do like fine jewelry? Like, what kind of jewelry you want to go? And then you might have just like a very unclear, like a target objective here, but there are so many ways going to get here, right? So many ways. And you just have to start it somewhere. And then the goal might change, but you are on the path already. You're on the path getting there. So I would say start it somewhere. And don't feel guilty about making mistakes. Like, learn from these mistakes. Like, making mistakes is a good thing, that you learn from it and making sure you don't make them again. So that's the reason why experience is important, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, there's always detours on roadmaps, aren't there? People get in the way.
Paths get to the same place, and each journey is going to have a different learning and a different story. So
yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's important just to get going, got to start moving.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess for me, it's like, how did you get into diamonds? How is diamonds your niche? You know, how are these rare gemstones your, you know, how did you get to that path?
Well, I started doing diamonds. Like right now, I don't get involved with investment grade diamonds. For example, like a 10 carat, 20 carat up kind of diamonds. I haven't reached the point where I'm able to handle that kind of business. Mostly I do fine jewelry, but how I get it started is still working in the old company, because the company is very small and I need to sort the diamonds as well by the size, by the colors. So I would spend 3-4 hours just sorting the diamonds like all day. And that is and after the sorting, I need to show it to my boss saying, hey, what do you think about this? Is the standard okay? Like, is my sorting like range okay? And then he would give me advice, say, no, this kind should be in here, this kind should be in here. So you get to know how to tell the colors and the clarity of the diamonds. And that's where I have developed my skill, not by going to school, but just doing a very practical work, and then having my boss to tell me whether am I doing it right or wrong. So that's how I get it started. And also working in the previous wholesaling company, I get exposure to a lot of vendors and know what they do, because I think when it comes to diamonds, people only think about the white diamonds, you know, like 1 carat, 2 carat white diamonds. But no, that's not true. There are different kind of diamonds. There's color diamonds, fancy cut diamonds, and there are brown diamonds. So there are like so many different types of diamonds. And so that's what I said when you wanted to start your career, you really need, especially in jewelry industry and diamond industry, is think about what you want to do. Do you want to work in auction house only dealing with the rare pieces, like, you know, 10 carat blue diamonds, 5 carat pink diamonds, or do you want to do like for daily use diamonds, you know, like just very simple, a simple ring that is for people to go to work. What kind of diamond do you want to do, you know? So there are different sessions and different, and each session has their different rules of how it works. So, understanding what you want first, and then figure out a way to get there, to get involved.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. We did a podcast about a fitness coach a couple of weeks ago, and it's so similar. You know, it's getting stuck into a business, understanding what you enjoy, what you don't enjoy, what the holes are within that industry, and then also understanding your niche, how you niche down into it, how you get involved in it, what you're fascinated about, where you want to help, where you want to get stuck into people's lives, essentially. Mm-hmm. And that's wonderful.
Yeah, exactly. And I do have to say, like, when it gets started, you will have a lot of frustration because you don't know, right? But don't let this frustration to just destroy you, because sometimes people will get like, oh, it's so sad, why I do this wrong, like my boss yelled at me, and etc. etc. I always keep a very positive attitude, like, okay, I made this mistake, and like, you know, which is a good thing, because I'm making a mistake and I'm still alive, you know, and it is not the end of the day. Like, you know, you still keep it going, and you just learn from this experience, learn from these mistakes. And I think, yeah, just get yourself out there and try as many things as possible. Yeah.
Yeah. You're not a doctor. It's not brain surgery. And every mistake that you make makes you a better person at that job that you are fighting at. So every frustration you feel means you are going to be so much better than the rest.
Yeah, exactly. That is so right.
So what would be your favorite thing about what you do now?
My favorite thing about what I do right now, I think is learning the history of the jewelry pieces and then building a stronger relationship with the clients, especially my friends, know them more and, look at these shiny things every day, I guess.
Definitely. Sorting through diamonds. I think that would be so therapeutic. Is that one?
Yeah. And then let me think about what are the things I like about my job. I also like designing as well. Designing the pieces. I have just designed a collections. I got some ideas about what life is and what like connection is, because I'm reading books and watching movies. So I come up with like a new collections, just especially talking about like connections of human beings. And I think so it's very good for me that, you know, I have some ideas and I will be able to bring the ideas into life through jewelry design. So that is something I like about as well. I just feel like, oh gosh, I'm making my idea come alive, you know, just making your own, having your own babies, basically. So that is another part I really like about my job as well.
You're creative babies. They're the best. They inspire people and move on. And you really will, because jewelry is so based on the people. Like I mentioned with my bangles, one's my grandma, one's my mom, one's my husband. You know, I wear them daily. I forget that they make so much noise. And even with the podcast, I've got them tied up so they don't jingle. But, you know, it's that story that you're always going to have. And it's something that's attached to you. And it's something that my grandmother's passing on so much jewelry to me. She keeps saying, you have to fly to South Africa because she's never shipping it out. So she can pass on every story, and she will tell me every story about every piece. So you're passing on history to history and connection. It's an amazing job.
Yeah, exactly. Thank you so much.
Your collections, are they available for us to see online, or how do you sell your collections?
So for example, I can show a little bit. This is the new collections I have, because I was talking about the connections with peoples. So, basically I think like every single one has their own path, and that it is some event happens in life that connects these two peoples together. So this is something very fascinating. And Nate, back to your story. So I have a showroom in Wan Chai, so people can come to my showroom to check on the pieces, and they also can just purchase it online. But right now, I think 90% of the business happens in my showroom rather than online. I think I should push it a bit more on the online side as well.
Yeah, definitely. If you are shipping in Australia, honestly, it's quite hard to get anything good online. I've tried many different. I tried to start an Etsy business, but we could sit here and talk about that forever. But you know, there's just not much here, you know, and providing that would be amazing. I think you've got a really good audience here for it.
Thank you, Roxy. And so coming back to you guys' questions, like, is there any other bad things about or worst thing about doing the business? Is, oh yes, you don't have like a regular hours, because you deal with overseas clients, right? So if I'm dealing with Canadian clients, they might message at 11 p.m. And if I got time, I still reply them. If not, I just wake up next morning. But it's just like 24/7 is like everyone will send something to you, your vendor, your clients, or your friends will send you some new ideas. So you just like sort of like your job has become part of your life, I have to say. Yeah, but I'm not saying that's the worst thing. But I would say like you really need to do well on time management. Otherwise, you will get like nervous. Like for example, when I first started the business, whenever the client sent me a message, I would just wake up right away, and then just reply them right away. But it's okay, just be chill. You know, it's how you manage your time is important, and as long as you are a trustworthy person, you get the task and you did it for the goods that they want, I think that's okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to set your own personal non-negotiables. So, you know, you need to sort of say, okay, if I get back in touch with that client after 24 hours, I'm okay with that. I can speak tomorrow.
Exactly.
You know, rather than worrying so much more about what the client thinks, because you end up in this bubble of, I've got to get back to them, I've got to do this thing, and then you lose out on family, you lose out on the event, you're not thinking in the moment, you're not sitting on the beach enjoying yourself.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think it is not just just something happens when you run your own business. I think if something happens with your colleagues or with your if just a regular job, you know, sometimes your colleague will send you things. And I feel like it's very important to create your own boundary as well. When it comes to, when it comes to work, I've been telling my sister a lot because she's not involved with my company like full time. She's still got a job. I would say like, okay, when you need to zoom out, you know, you can't just like get too caught up on this certain things and like spend your whole days worrying about one message or one comment your boss said, like you need to move on, you know? And, and yeah, just creating a boundary when you like play hard, work hard, basically.
I like to think of them as two visual boundaries. One, the negative thing about your boss saying something to you or a negative environment. And I get to take that negative thought in my head, turn it into a gremlin, get a bat and start beating up the gremlin. And then you laugh and you've gotten over the fact that it was a negative thought that's out of your head. That sounds really odd. But you find the one thing that sort of switches the thought train that you're on onto something else, which is amazing.
Yeah.
And then there's also the lines in the sand. So actual physical lines in the sand. Okay, this is my job. This is my home. When I cross over that line, that is where I go and enjoy my time.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it's like it's finding the line that I always say this to people without explaining the entire visual process of it, but where's your line in the sand, lady?
I agree. And I also wanted to say that everyone's line is different, you know? And just like, you need to create your own line, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You
create your own picture on the beach. And then
And
you just need to not be afraid of the insecurities, you know? And like everybody's going through it, starting a company, starting a new job, or even not enjoying their job. You know, being able to open up and talk about the things that matter are the most important. I started a creative masterminds in Sydney when I first moved to Australia, and it was the weirdest experience of my life because I turned up at the Bavarian and everyone ordered food, but I ended up coaching people through what they were going through. So they're all freaking out. They're all spending lots of money. One lady was making T-shirts. She was doing a great job. She'd done all the research. She gave everybody advice. But then everybody else was there looking for a lost soul, looking for your Nathan, you know, looking for that person that you can freak out at and talk to about. And I can tell you, it's pretty hard to find at the end of the day. Looking for your sister. Your sister getting stuck into your business is incredible. Yeah. And that can be hard. Family can be hard.
I know. You're right about it. Sometimes we have different thoughts about certain things, and she thinks A, I think B. So I think like when it comes to running business with your family, you're way too close, you know, and then you will like, I think we should have some boundary as well, but like this boundary, when it comes to a certain point, just sort of disappear and you cross the boundary so easily, but you are still, but like at the end of the day, you will still see each other because you're family, right?
The problem with family is they can dig a hole under the sand because they know all the avenues.
I know.
It sneaks up on you.
Exactly.
It's still good, you know, like going to networking events, and I think that's kind of how you and Nathan met, essentially, in that environment, and being able to talk to each other and be open about all of that is the first step, you know. It's like, I went to a local event. I live in a tiny little village now, and it was terrifying because I was there with everybody's family and friends, and I was literally the only person there that was a complete foreigner. But it still worked. You know, you still met people. I still found a worm farmer for the podcast, hopefully. So
there you go. There you go.
Putting yourself out there. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You need to start it somewhere, and then you would meet different people in a networking event. And, and I think the unknownness, like you don't know what's going to happen. So that kind of is like a excitement for me. Like when I was younger, doing something I don't know about the outcome will scare me. But right now, doing something that I don't know the outcome excites me, that I wanted to try it and see what happens. So I think when you get older, when you have more experience, that yeah, like your thought would change. Yeah,
that's such a brilliant way of thinking. So we had a guest a couple of weeks say that if you know the outcome, mm-hmm. you're less likely to do it. Because you get older and you get through so many experiences, you're less likely to do things because you know you can predict the negative thoughts that might happen. So, you know, as a kid, you jump off the couch like my son at 1 year old is doing and keeps repeatedly doing it. But, you know, when you're older, you don't jump off the couch because you know you're going to break something.
Yeah,
but exactly. Your way of thinking where it's like, if it's something new and it excites you, jump off the edge, go for it. You never know.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Yeah. And very interesting theory. I think I heard of this kind of theory a couple years ago. They mentioned about there are three things in the world. There are things that you know. There are the things that you know you don't know, and there are also things that you don't know. You know, like for example, I know about diamonds. I know the clarity. I know the colors. But there are some things that I don't know. I don't know the distance between. There are some things I know I don't know. Like I know there is a distance between Earth and the Moon, but I don't know how much it is. But I know that these kind of things exist. But there are things that you don't know. You know, there are things just like completely it is not in your knowledge. And I always keep this theory in my mind because I know there are so many opportunities out there, and there are so the world is so big. And so don't be afraid. Try things. And no more things, you know, make the things you don't know to become something you know.
You're doing so well at that.
Yeah, yeah.
It's a really good segment into our next question is, what advice do you give to anybody who's starting out in what you're doing?
Advice. I think we talk about it is just know, like, what your goal is, what your objective is. You know, you want to, because it's very different. If you want to become a wholesaler in the jewelry industry, it's very different from being a jewelry designer in the jewelry industry. So know what you want to do first. Like, this is my first advice. And second thing is start somewhere, you know. Like, I don't know, like, maybe they are just only hiring a accountant in the jewelry company, but, like, if that's the skills that you have, like you want to change your career, you know, first of all, you're an accountant right now and you want to change your career, be an accountant in a jewelry company first and see if there's like any opportunities in the company and you can switch, you know. So start it somewhere first. Know what you want and then start it somewhere first. I think that's my advice.
I think that's amazing because accountants, admin, HR, finance, all of those sort of core skills, like doing an admin course and TAFE in Australia for a year when you get out of uni, it's a really good, it's almost like having a trade.
Yeah.
You know, you can take that in and put it into so many different industries. It's incredible. And then work out whether or not you want to work in that industry.
Yeah exactly. And I think, I don't know. I feel like having experiences is important as well. But like also know about what kind of skill sets you need to have or you want to have. For example, when I never studied jewelry design before, like all of these thoughts, it just comes out, stop. Drawing something on the paper and then see if it matches. But I think good advantage about me is I have a lot of just that. I have like some stocks, so I can play around with it and see the sizes if that fits. So that is one advantage of me. But think about if I didn't start as like a wholesaler, I wouldn't have this stock. I wouldn't have the chance to play it around. So for example, like me as example, I can design jewelry by doing wholesale first, or you can go to school and then learn about the design, learn about the concept, but you need to start it somewhere first. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's really crucial to do the job that you're doing or the job that you landed and decide how that has moved you forward. And I think I talk about this a lot, where it's like any short course you do, any job you do, any temp job you do, somehow lines back up to what you end up doing and loving in the future. It's your, yeah, your core values, your core skills,
yeah,
that are incredible. So
exactly, yeah, exactly. And also one last advice is try your best to network with people. The example I mentioned about, for example, you're an accountant, but you want to switch into become a jeweler. You can work in a, you can work in a jewelry company. And then you got exposure to your colleagues, right? You can talk to the owner saying, hey, I actually would love to try to become a jeweler. I want, maybe is there like a, I can help with a sourcing team doing some other extra paperwork. And then you will know about the price of the gemstones. I don't know. I just like, this example just come out of nowhere, but like try to reach out to as many people, and then they will give advice, and you will get what you want at the end of the day if you just keep trying.
Yeah, it's a really good way. If you enter the industry, we interviewed a guy called Jamie, who was a technical director who started off in R&D and asked a million amount of questions, then went off to be an artist and a technical director in the same company, because he pushed, he asked questions, he got to know where he wanted to go, he worked out what he liked, what he didn't like, and it's a brilliant, you know, brilliant way of being a fly on the wall that suddenly turns into a butterfly somehow.
I agree. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I would say if you have resources, starting in having a GIA certification is, having a GIA degree or a GIA, doing a GIA course is really, really helpful. But however, as I said, it's really, there, like when it comes to jewelry industry, so many aspects. Think about what you want to do. Do you want to do diamonds? Do you want to do gemstones? Because the costs are not cheap. So for example, if you want to start with gemstone first, you can do the gemstone course, and you can also do the diamond course later, but doing a GI course is something helpful, I think. But it really depends on the resource that you have. If you couldn't afford the course, and then you can go to just work in a different company. The options are limitless. Like, depends on your resources, depends on what you have, and then go with the option that fits you the most. That's what I think. Yeah.
And what does GIA stand for?
So GIA is here. I'm not sure if you can see in the screen.
Yeah.
GIA. So actually the name is Gemological Institution of America. So GIA, that's what GIA means. So GIA is they created the called 4C, which is the diamond standard. Includes the colors, if I can see that.
Oh, wow.
The clarity, which is whether or not the diamond is clean, the cut, which is the cutting, and also the carat. Carat means the weight of the diamond. So this is very well known, like a institution. You can get your diamond tested in there. You can do courses there. So if you want to start somewhere, I think, yeah, start it with here. Yeah.
Brilliant. No, that's great. I mean, I've been in, like, my mom was a big auctioneer jewelry person, so she was always collecting stuff. And we've been into so many auctions where the guy's like ticking off all the boxes, and I never actually knew what carat meant. I thought it was just like I didn't realize it was the weight.
Yeah, it's the weight. The carat is the weight. Yeah. Yes. So you learn something new, right? So
yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes.
I've learned so much. I kind of wish you were around when I was trying to design my wedding ring, but I managed to find a fluke ring that fit with my engagement ring really well.
Yeah, it's totally fine. I think for me, my practice of doing my business is, if it happens, it will happen, you know. Like some people will like ask a quotation for like 5 months ago and then circle back now to say, hey, I actually want to make a ring because this is the right timing. And I feel like making a jewelry is about the right timing, it's about the trust, it's about like at the right moment. So I never really push my clients that, hey, this is how you need to get this deal or what. Like I would say, you know, take your time to think about it and then let me know if you want to, you know, to go next step. So it is totally fine, Roxy. And I'm really happy that you have the engagement ring, that the ring that you like right now. Yes.
Yeah. I'll still be sending my husband to you. That's for sure.
Oh.
Come on, 35th birthday.
Oh, yes. 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 Let's do it.
But I think that'd be a really good niche for you as well. Like looking into that when I was looking for my engagement ring, especially in Australia, like designing one for someone, there's so many ideas. I had no idea about jewelry. So being able to talk to someone like you just for consultation for a couple of bucks, I think you'd make a fortune out of that.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Absolutely correct.
So are there, it takes us to our last question, and we'll probably go into a couple more after that if you need to or want to cover anything else. But what's the most inspirational quote that you've got?
Inspirational quotes. I think it's very cliche to say this, but like never give up. Like I still remember when I started the business, I need to arrange the showroom, order the showroom by myself, design the logo by myself, order jewelry boxes by myself, and of course need to do all the cleaning by myself. Like when the shipment arrives, jewelry boxes, I need to unbox it and then throw away the packaging. Like there are moments I was asking, why don't I just stay in my job? Like it was so much easier. I don't need to deal with this. But like I know what I want in my life. So I just feel like, you know what? Don't give up. Even when it's tough, but just keep it going. Just keep it going and don't give up. I know it's very cliche to say this, but it really is the truth. Like don't give up. Yeah. Exactly.
Our business motto is baby steps. So nothing else feels daunting. Just keep taking those baby steps. What's your baby step today, Nathan? What's my baby step today? Let's do it.
Exactly. Yeah. Just keep things moving. And as long as it is like one like baby step further than yesterday, it is an improvement. Just give yourself a round of good applause and you have made it this far. Yeah. I think about like every baby step, like if you take like a baby step every day, think about it within a year, think about a decade, you know? So yeah, you there you go. Exactly. Correct.
I watched Finding Nemo to keep my son entertained yesterday. So all day yesterday, I was going, just keep moving. Yeah. It was one of those days where it's like, just keep moving. I think one question that I do want to ask you, because you do run your own business. How do I find you? How do I send my husband to you? You know, how do I?
It's very simple.
Yes, I have a diamond ring. Well, yeah, I want another one.
we have a website, www.shilou.com. So you can reach us there. You can see all of the collections or the designing ideas, or I also upload a couple of mounted gemstones on there, so you can see that what you like, and that's one way to reach out to us. And second one is you can ask Nate my numbers and then Nate would just get us connected on WhatsApp.
I mean, we create show notes for all of our podcasts when they finally get up, because we're all starting at the moment. But I think it'd be great to direct people to you. And also with the question, if you don't mind, of, you know, creating an engagement ring or an occasion ring, because honestly, I think, I'd be sending my husband to you.
There we go. You know what? That is something I think about when I was doing this collections, because think about Roxy and I, we never know each other. And because the broadcast does connect us together. And I feel like that is like, And right now, Roxy, you have become one of my friends, right? So yeah, just like for friendship or connections. And I think, you know, and this is just like so great. I'm so happy. Yeah.
Yeah. It's the funny thing is you meet people through opportunities and projects like this podcast. We've met so many wonderful people and exactly. So many opportunities. And
yeah. And
it's funny with jewelry, everyone has sort of some connection to it. Like you show me that, I can see my son and I. Like I would buy that because he's next to me and that's kind of our connection. And that's why I would wear it. You know, there's so
many
meanings to it. It's incredible.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
You've been listening to Roxy and Nate. Thanks for tuning in to A to Z Jobs. And always remember, it's your career and it's up to you to shape it. So dream big, make bold moves, stay curious, and keep exploring. Check out our website at thecareerchangecoaches.com for more resources, tools, and upcoming training.
Thank you for joining us on this journey. Don't forget to subscribe and hit that notification bell so you never miss an episode of A to Z Jobs. Remember, your dream career could be just one episode away.